And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take the poll on my website. It's a real simple yes or no question. Do you think 2012 will be better than 2011? Yes or no? Take it on my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com. I'll give the results of the poll on tomorrow's show. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is freedom. Each of my guests is explaining a type of freedom, whether it's freedom to use technology, financial freedom, or personal freedom. My next guest is the show's financial guru. I've invited him to return to the show to discuss 2011's top financial headlines and to forecast the financial markets in 2012. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you have a question, you can call us at 639-0008. My regular listeners know Ken Winans for his insightful and profitable financial advice. Ken is a successful investment management entrepreneur and an award-winning author, an active philanthropist, and a renowned collector. He's the president of Winans International, an investment company and fund manager. He's also a regular guest on various TV and radio shows, including CBS affiliate KNX in Los Angeles. Ken is also a business historian as well as a financial guru. He got his bachelor's degree in business economics from the University of San Diego. He got his master's degree in finance from the University of San Francisco. Joining us from the Bay Area. Hi, Ken. How are you doing today?
Hey, Bill. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, too. Wow. What a year. I'm kind of glad to get 2011 behind us. Mercifully, it's over. So let's evaluate the year's performance, because the financial markets were I guess, crazy is a word to use. Stocks finished the year virtually flat, despite record volatility, which is just incredible when you consider we had the Japanese earthquake and tsunami. We had the European debt crisis, the Arab Spring, the Occupy Wall Street. We killed Osama bin Laden. We drove Muammar Gaddafi out of power. And Kim Il-sung dies. I mean, if you lump all of that together, for the markets to have been flat last year is something of a remarkable feat, don't you think?
I absolutely agree with you. And you know, beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. Those people who own the 30 Dow industrial stocks actually had a good year. They were up 6%. Those that own the NASDAQ 100 were up 3%. Those that were in small cap stocks were down 5%. And those unfortunate souls that had invested heavily in foreign stocks took a real drubbing last year. They were down on average about 20%. So it was really, it was where you were in the market determined whether or not you had a good year or a bad year. And as you just talked about, the S&P 500 effectively finished flat on the year.
Yeah, it was. Now, you mentioned the international markets. The world stock markets, as you say, were down, and they certainly fared a whole lot worse than the United States. Interestingly enough, everybody talks about China. Tell us what happened to the Chinese stock market last year, because I find that very interesting in light of the fact that we were flat.
Well, here's a couple things to think about. In fact, my next Forbes piece is about foreign investing. And I am somebody who's raising my hand saying, no, I understand that the investment industry is telling everybody, or as I call the pie chart guys, are telling everybody that you've got to have money in the new emerging powers, that America is the next Rome and it's going off a cliff and you've got to have your money over there. But the simple reality of the fact is that if you had taken that advice and you bought the China Exchange Traded Fund, symbol FXI, you were down 19% on the year, and you have been down 17% over the last 24 months. By any stretch of the imagination, that theme has not worked out. And the reason is simple. Yes, China's growing. Yes, China's the world's second largest economy, and China is an export-driven economy. If you have the dollar strengthening, if you have your European customers stop buying stuff from you, you will not be able to stand independent. And we are now realizing that with the BRIC countries. They cannot stand by themselves. Their domestic economies are not big enough yet.
No, they're not. My guest is Ken Winans. We're talking about financial performance in the year 2011. So moving to a different asset class, bonds actually finished the year up 4%, which was interesting and I guess a little bit surprising considering how much money we have been printing as a nation and so forth. What do you make of the bonds finish for the year?
I think it's all because of the dollar. You know, it's funny how if you and I remember earlier conversations last year, the fear was the dollar. The dollar was hitting, as some of my pundits were saying, record lows, even though that was not true. But lo and behold, the dollar staged a 12% rally in the last half of the year. And I'm saying that the dollar, relative to the value of other currencies like the euro and the yen. And if you take what we call the dollar index, which is to take it as a basket, and compare the dollar net increased value, because people were running for cover. The fear that Europe's problems will persist for a while is shifting money around in the world. And certainly when you have that happen, that means treasuries go up in value. That means corporate bonds go up, preferred stocks, anything that pays a high level of income. If you're a foreign investor, you're getting the bang for the buck. You're getting a strengthening U.S. dollar, and you're getting dividends and interest payments on top of it. So for you, you're making a lot of money. You're doing well.
Ken, you said the magic word. You are an expert in preferred stocks. It's an asset class that doesn't get talked about a whole lot when they do market recaps at the end of the year, yet it is somewhat closely tied to the performance of bonds, as you indicated in that last answer. So talk to us about preferred stocks. Was that the place to be last year in 2011?
Absolutely. As a group, they finished up about 6% on the year, and they didn't have nearly the volatility of the overall market. Take the word stock out of it. I just prefer to call them, excuse the pun, preferreds. They are really a different asset group entirely. They pay a very high dividend that is fixed and secure, meaning that the company can't cut it without there being ramifications. So in that respect, they're more like a bond. They don't necessarily come due like a bond. That's why you're in kind of this funny world. But when you're comparing especially some very slow growth industries, utilities would be a very good example of it. I would much rather own a preferred in a utility company than I would own the common stock, because, as we know, common stock dividends can get cut, and many people who own utilities own them because of the dividends. So I have found that in an income portfolio with bonds, to have preferreds as a mix has been a real winning combination for us. And as you say, Bill, it's overlooked. It's one of these areas that the institutional investor haven't completely taken over and turned it into a synthesized product for the retail investor. This is where the retail or the individual investor really has an edge. So I would recommend that income-based strategies have been the winning situation really since the Great Recession ended.
My guest is Ken Winans. He's the CEO of Winans International. We're talking about performance last year in the financial markets. Commodities, which were the darling in 2010, dropped last year. Even gold and silver fell towards the end of the year. First of all, the performance of commodities. What caused the dramatic drop that we saw in commodity prices, and do you foresee that going into 2012?
Well, first off, it's all driven by supply and demand. I mean, everything in economics comes down to that. It's interesting you bring up gold and silver. There were an awful lot of people telling everyday investors, same kind of thing. It's the pie chart guys telling people you've got to have a fixed amount of money in gold and silver and do it through the ETFs. It's true you can make money in gold and silver, no doubt about it. They've been on one heck of a run. But the reality of it is we forgot just how volatile these things can be on the downside. Silver took a 44% hit from its highs in March.
Ouch.
It was the worst correcting asset of everything I watched. Gold is down 18% off of its highs. So I think it's not to say don't own them, but I would certainly do not turn your back on these things. They will bite you. Now, going into this year, it comes back to the global economy. If you think there's going to be a resurgence in the global economy, not just the United States, but all in all around the world, then commodity prices as a general group will go up. But if you have a global slowdown, then you can expect prices and commodities to soften. And as far as what I would do right now, I would rather own companies that are in the agribusiness than I think actually own a basket of commodities. I think at least there you get a dividend in case things do slow down.
Now that's sage advice. My guest is Ken Winans. So, Ken, if we take a look ahead to the year 2012, now I know forecasting is a fool's game, but if you look at 2010, that was definitely the year of the commodity. 2011 was the year of the Treasury bond, as we said. Over the weekend, I read a piece that Barron's analysis states that after a flat year like we had in 2011, stock markets grow 8%, if there's no dividend reinvestment, or a whopping 24% if there is dividend reinvestment in the following year. Now, couple that statistic with the fact that in the fourth year of a presidency, on average, the stock market also goes up. You're looking at 2012 shaping up to be a pretty good year for the stocks. So my question to you is 2012 the year of the stock?
I'm fully invested right now. So as putting my money where my mouth is, I'm in that camp to think this will be a very good year. Those statistics that you just rattled off are very interesting, because for folks who used those statistics in 2007, when the S&P 500 was up 4%, we all know you ended up getting slaughtered in 2008, which, by the way, was also an election year. So you want to be careful about just taking these things, you know, word for word, and assume it's always going to be identical. But with that being said, you know, I'm very much a believer in doing market analysis, and one of the key benchmarks I use, or key indicators that I use, is the 200-day moving average. Right now, the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ are all above their 200-day moving averages, which tells me that the trend is on the upside. I think as long as you don't just go in there and buy everything, be very selective about the investments you buy, I think you will do well this year. But don't be lulled into thinking it's going to go straight up. I think the volatility is here to stay for a while, Bill.
Oh, that's a little bit frightening after the volatility that we experienced in 2011. So, Ken, where else do you see opportunity in 2012 besides common stocks?
Well, I'm still a big believer in bonds, and I'm talking about corporate bonds, and I'm talking about preferred stocks. I think the corporate income side, where you can still get good yields, and I'm talking about yields that are 6 and 7%, even right now, I think that's a good place for retirees to begin to park their money. The areas that I would continue to avoid, I'm staying clear of the foreign market still. I have not warmed up to the banks. You know, I know that everybody likes to keep looking at Bank America and say, wow, look how cheap it is. I look at it a little differently. I look at a stock that lost 60% of its value, and where there's smoke, there's usually fire. I don't want to step into something like that. But I think this trend for people eyeing retirement, you've got to be thinking in terms of income-based investments. Now, real estate, we haven't talked about that. I just compiled my Winans International Real Estate Index that basically looks out 30 days. Unfortunately, we did not get a Santa Claus rally in housing at the end of the year, and this is with record low mortgages. The housing problems will be persisting through next year. I don't see that being a very quick recovery at all. But it does not mean that you cannot selectively find places to go. The only other thing I would bring up, there's a lot of people who have switched from individual investments to ETFs. Again, be very careful with these things. I like to remind everybody that the S&P 500 has, even though you might hate the banks, remember that a huge percentage of the S&P 500 is, in fact, financial companies. So you've got to be careful about how you use ETF and indices going through this year. You've got to know what you're in.
That makes good sense. My guest is Ken Winans. He's the CEO of Winans International. Ken, I'm going to change it up a little bit, shift gears on you if I can.
Sure.
Because politics and Wall Street lately have been inextricably linked. You can't talk about one without the other.
Absolutely.
And we've just begun the 2012 presidential cycle. So what are President Obama's chances of getting reelected with unemployment at 8.6%, the economy struggling the way that it is, Obamacare under review by the Supreme Court in April of 2012, the U.S. credit rating down to AA+ for the first time in U.S. history, it dropped from AAA, and the post office losing $10.5 billion last year, closing somewhere between 3,000 and 15,000 facilities and eliminating Saturday service. What are the chances with this type of macroeconomic environment that we'd see the president get reelected?
Well, I'll throw one other one in there too, Bill. I think we're all still scratching our head about Iraq.
Hmm.
I hate to say it, but and some people are referring to it as Vietnam too. I hope I don't mean to demean the service of our troops, but I'm sure anybody who was over there looking at what we left behind are really beginning to ask themselves what we did. But anyway, with that being said, yeah, you rattled off a lot of real negatives, and I think it's going to come down to what kind of a campaign that the Republican candidate can run, and can they entice the independent voter to come over. From what you know, certainly I just like you, things seem to change every day. If you have housing continuing to deteriorate, if you have the stock market go into a total nosedive, I will tell you that rarely is somebody reelected when you have those two things happening. But you brought up unemployment. I mean, I think a common sense prevails in this. Just as Ronald Reagan said, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And that's going to be the kind of thing that I think the Republicans are going to run. But again, the key is going to be the independent voter and how they feel about things. But with that being said, remember that at the same time, markets primarily run on earnings and interest rates. And if you have some kind of using Star Trek terms, a recovery that's on impulse power, that it does, you know, continue to show things are gradually getting better, you never know. It might turn out that we have what we have right now, kind of a split Congress, and you have the president still in power.
Well, that remains to be seen, Ken. My guest is Ken Winans. But I'm a big fan of statistics, as I know you are, because you're a numbers guy as well. No president in the post-Depression era has ever been reelected with unemployment at 8.6%, or that close to 9%.
Yep.
You know, I'm just betting on the odds that that may be a significant factor when it
comes. FDR ended up getting four terms, and his unemployment numbers are worse than that.
That's so. What I said, post-Depression.
Hey, Bill, I want to be put on the record since we like to do all this thing. Let me give you some targets and hold me to them at the end of the year.
All right, go.
I asked the computer to give me the magic target for this year. I think there's a very distinct possibility that during the year the S&P 500 will hit 1422.
Whoa, now let's just stop right there before we go any farther. What sort of, that's almost a 20% increase over where we are today.
That's right. That's right. And that's without dividends.
I'm stunned.
And what that comes from is looking at data over the last 23 years and looking at an average annual increase in the S&P 500 in a given year. And so the question to ask yourself, after you had a muted year like last year, can you expect there to be an average annual inter-year high of 1422? And statistically, the answer is yes. So with that in mind, appealing to greed, people who are sitting with too much cash on the sideline should ask themselves, do you really want to take a chance on missing something like that?
Wow. All right. Well, that certainly makes this the year of the stock. What other target can you give me before we have to leave?
I'll give you the Dow.
All right.
13,952.
Give me that again.
13,952.
Nearly 14,000.
Yeah.
That would be near its all-time high.
That could be it. Exactly. Now, again, this is if you have an average annual inter-year high on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The NASDAQ 100, you're looking at 2,894.
Well, the way off of its all-time high, without a doubt, because of the bubble that we had.
You and I will be very old and maybe getting Social Security by the time the NASDAQ ever gets back to its old high.
Well, I will one-up you there, because I don't think Social Security is going to be around when you and I go to retire, but that's a whole other story. My guest has been Ken Winans. He's the CEO of Winans International. He's given us three targets, S&P 1422 sometime during the year, Dow 13,952, NASDAQ 2,894, all of them very optimistic numbers. This could be the year of the stock. Ken, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn a little bit more about some of these optimistic forecasts, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, first off, I don't think there's any substitute for everybody learning history, especially learning economic history. And I would encourage people to read my books, which have a very much a historical bend. They can be bought on Amazon.com. My last name is spelled W-I-N-A-N-S, first name Ken. That would be a good place to start. I think it is worthwhile also, be careful, statistics themselves can be very politicized during this year. So when you get somebody giving you an economic statistic, be careful, because if you change the sample size or the calculation methodology, you will get a different outcome. So you want to be true to the numbers you're looking at to make economic decisions. Word to the wise, remember what happened to the National Association of Realtors on, lo and behold, cooking their numbers, for lack of a better term, over the last 5 years on housing sales. So you got to be very careful who you're getting data from. Certainly go to my website, winansinternational.com, and you will find, certainly we keep our Winans Preferred Stock Index and our Winans Housing Index available for people to review there.
Oh, that is great, Ken. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Take care, Bill.
Take care.